You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. I'm Allison Twitter from MLB.com. And as we look at the final couple of weeks in Major League Baseball, obviously the NL West race seems to be over a little bit earlier than we thought it was going to be. But the Dodgers are in this to win this, and they're going to, even if they're not really playing at full strength, and even if they have a couple of bad games here and there. But, of course, they have those great two starting pitchers at the top of the rotation. So they should have no problem closing this out, and it will probably happen sooner or later. So that is a quick look at the NL West. Ken, I was reading some of the coverage, and it sounded like the Dodgers were even lucky maybe to have had this thing go into extra innings, because it didn't sound like it was a very clean game for them early.
No, it wasn't a very good game for either team. Probably neither deserved a win, but someone had to. And, you know, unfortunately, Matt Latos gave up a home run to Arenado in the 16th inning. They had to go to Latos after using everybody else they had in the bullpen. So there were 10 pitchers used before Latos. So it was unfortunate for him. Obviously, he's trying to get his act back together and be some sort of factor after being a deadline acquisition, but he's really struggled. And it cost him the game last night. You know, he's not used to pitching out of relief, so he was out of his element. And Dodgers made 3 errors and a lot more mental errors, and just wasn't a very good game, but it's over with, and they'll try to win the series tonight.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to these really long games, we say like 10 pitchers came in even before Latos. And, of course, the expanded rosters, I mean, that's partly why they're available, to make sure that, you know, guys aren't getting overstretched and overworked and overtaxed and all that stuff. But it has to be tough to have that kind of game when they're also trying to preserve and get something together for October to make sure that they can, you know, get through the month. Are these kind of really, really long games? Does it make it a little worse if they're in September?
Well, I mean, you can look at it both ways. You know, to a certain extent, at least they have the extra body, so you're not burning out a bullpen and not really having many options to go to. You know, they, for better or for worse, they've got that many arms, so they can use them. And Don Mattingly has complained about the expanded rosters in September. He says as long as he's given these players, he'll use them, but he doesn't feel it's right that for 5 months of the year you play by one set of rules, and then in what could be viewed as the most important month of the season, they change the rules and everybody's playing the game differently. So, and there's an argument to be made there that he's right, even though it's been done forever. So I know he would like to see the rules changed, at least cut back from, you know, it's quite a jump from 25 to 40. You know, maybe you would get an extra 3 players or 4 players, but they had a potential of 15 and a run through almost 60 players, as both teams did combined last night. It really does change the way the game's played from the other 5 months.
There's another subplot that seems to be brewing a little bit. It's very interesting. Just Corey Seager, obviously, he's had a very nice showing in his first audition as a major leaguer, and Mattingly has been pretty emphatic in the past about saying that Jimmy Rollins is going to get his job back when he's healthy. But now there seems to be, he might be backing off of that a little bit. He might not be as definitive, I should say. Softening his stance, maybe. Is that going to be something that he could change his mind on if Seager continues to produce?
Yeah, it seems like he already is changing his mind. And, you know, when you look at it, it's logical. When he first said it, Corey Seager hadn't made the splash that he made. And many of the other players in the lineup were producing, and now it's kind of flipped the other way. Seager's become one of the more reliable bats in the lineup over these 2 weeks that he's been here. And you can't ignore that. It's almost irrelevant that it's about Jimmy Rollins. It's become more about Corey Seager and how much he's added to the lineup since he came in. And he's playing like a major leaguer, not like a call-up minor leaguer. And so he's become an important part of that lineup. He hits left-handers. He's patient. Not playing like a kid. And course, you know, Rollins has been hurt, and he's it's going on 2 weeks now, and he, as of yesterday, he hadn't even thrown a ball. So, you know, it's not like he's going to suddenly jump back into the lineup. He's been out for 2 weeks, so he hasn't hit for 2 weeks. He almost needs to go through a rehab assignment, even though there aren't minor league games. So this isn't going to change overnight. And so I think what Mattingly is now seeing is that for most of the month of September, Corey Seager will be playing and producing, and Jimmy Rollins won't be playing at all. And so then do you flip the switch when it really matters the most and swap them? You know, my guess is that Seager will make the postseason roster. It'll depend on what happens the last week of the season, but, you know, they may use both of them, just depending on how games go. But Seager is really, at least up to this point, put himself in the picture because he's been able to play the game on both ends and not look like a rookie.
Right. Okay, and on a lighter note, I just want to end this conversation with talking about rain, because I follow a lot of things that are going on in baseball just through Twitter, and all of a sudden everyone got very excited because apparently it started raining in Los Angeles during the game last night. How long did that last?
It rained quite a bit, actually. Of course, there were a lot of innings for it to rain. And so it rained on and off, but it was pretty steady over the last five or six innings. And as you said, that's pretty unusual for a Dodger game at any time of the year, especially September. The whole game was pretty weird, and hopefully we won't have a repeat.
Exactly. I just thought it was, I mean, everyone got excited because, of course, California could use a little rain, so... I remember being in L.A. like 15 years ago. We actually had a rain out. The Astros were in town, and there was a rain out. I don't think that had happened in like 10 years before that. They don't really have a lot of that.
Well, no, they don't, and we need it. You know, it's drought time, and you know, the lawns are all dying because they fine us if we water our lawns. So the rain is welcome last night, even if it interrupts the game.
Absolutely. Okay, Ken, thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Allison, thanks.
Here to speak with my buddy Chris Haft, who has been covering the very exciting San Francisco Giants, by the way, for a team that is probably not going to the postseason. But, oh, my goodness, Chris, let's talk about the game as we're recording this. It happened last night, and an epic matchup between Madison Bumgarner and Aroldis Chapman. But why don't I just leave the floor open to you? What stood out to you with this whole situation?
Well, number one, it was a heck of an at-bat by Madison Bumgarner, but I think every Giants fan and member of the front office was watching almost in fear, because what if Madison Bumgarner fouls a pitch off his foot or something like that? What if Aroldis Chapman, who doesn't have the greatest control on earth, throws one a little too close to Madison Bumgarner's noggin and something unfortunate happens? It was definitely a risk-reward type situation. I could see why Bruce Bochy did it. He didn't have anybody really better on his bench to pinch hit in that situation. So, you know, this one can be debated loud and long.
Madison Bumgarner likes to hit too, right? I mean, this isn't like just some like random happenstance. I mean, he likes the bat in his hand.
Madison Bumgarner loves to hit. He has 5 home runs this year. He's going to win the Silver Slugger, I'm sure, for pitchers. You know, he's the best hitting pitcher in the league. He's more competent up there than just about any pitcher. And if there's a pitcher as a hitter who can maybe handle the role as Chapman, it's Bum. I guess he was like the second pitcher ever to face the role as Chapman, some such stat. The first pitcher to reach base off, and that just says a lot about Bumgarner. It was a heck of an at bat. He fell behind 0-2, and fought back to draw the walk. He was a professional hitter. It's just that he also happens to be the Giants' best pitch, by far their best starting pitcher, and some would deem too valuable to risk using as a pinch hitter in that situation.
What was the crowd reaction when he came out on deck?
Nobody was, I don't think anybody was thinking about the negatives. Everybody was thrilled.
I can imagine. So this might have been a little bit of a disappointing outcome, back and forth. How long did this game take with the Reds?
I'm sorry?
How long did this game take, this 9-8 affair between the Giants and the Reds. It seemed to be a...
It was a mere 4 hours and 2 minutes. But it was an exciting 4 hours and 2 minutes, that's for sure. There's no way they can top that game tonight in the finale of the series, even though it's, the Giants are on the fringes of the race. They're trying to hang on. When this 9-game homestand started, people were saying, well, they have to go 8-1 or 9-0 just to have hopes of staying with the Dodgers. Well, they've gone 4-1, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, it was quite an affair last night.
I can imagine. I want to stay on the Madison Bumgarner topic because he's just so fascinating and so much fun to talk about. Since we last talked, he had a near perfect game, which is kind of like what you think could happen every single time this guy takes the mound. So that's exciting, and it's the way that baseball breaks your heart. This is a pretty good example. So he gives up. The reason he didn't have a perfect game is because he gave up a base hit with two outs in the eighth inning to someone who was 0-10 against him with six strikeouts in Melvin Upton Jr. Does that make that more disappointing or gut-wrenching, however you want to describe it, when it's someone that probably shouldn't have gotten a hit off of him, ends up ruining that kind of feat?
Oh, it's definitely gut-wrenching. Madison's been through this a lot before. I forget how many times he's taken a no-hitter into the later innings, but it's happened so often. It's happened at least once, twice a year for the last 3-4 seasons. Eventually, he's going to get one of these things, but there was some palpable disappointment, even though that was all among witnesses and spectators. Madison himself, I don't think I'm sure he cared, but he didn't let it ruin his evening, so to speak.
Corey, was there ever a point in the season? I mean, they never were really like a force in the division. I mean, maybe early on there seemed to be a little hope, but it seemed to be, coming from looking at this from the outside as I am, it seemed to be that that there was always sort of a feeling pretty early on that this maybe wasn't going to work out. Was there ever a time the players seemed to be sort of more accepting of the fact that maybe this wasn't going to be a non-contending year? And I'm not saying like that their attitudes are bad or anything, but was there ever a point where you thought, I think they kind of get what's happening here?
Well, you kind of look at the season and the ebbs and flows of it. And I've thought about that myself too, Allison, just kind of how this thing shook out. There was a point when the team was 10-5 and, that's a very small sample size. And then, things kind of fell off from there. And even, I think about early on, they weren't hitting very well. They weren't pitching very well. And there were times when they hit well and didn't pitch well. And then the tables kind of turned. At the time when they dismissed Buddy Black, they were only a game under 500 and still kind of hanging around. And then I think they went through a period there where after they dismissed Buddy, where they just weren't very good at all. And I think a lot of that had to do with the residual of firing a manager a lot of people respected, to be honest with you. And, it took a while for that shock to kind of wear off. And then, they were better in the second half at times. And then we've just seen periods where they've not been very good. I think they've been shut out 18 times this year for the names and the track records of guys you have in that offense. There's just been no sustained periods of consistency. And so there haven't been really periods where you could point to like, oh, there was that time, Allison, in July where they were right there. I think there was a point where they were kind of hanging around maybe last month with the D-backs and maybe kind of hanging around a little bit because the Dodgers were unwilling to run away with things. And the same with the Giants weren't playing that well. But no, there was never a point where they were really within a stone's throw of making a run at this thing.
Right. Well, I want to end this on a happier note, a much lighter note. So I want to talk about Cody Decker. And normally September columns do not get this kind of attention. Cody Decker is kind of a special guy, and that he's just highly entertaining. And I follow him on Twitter. I'm sure a lot of people listening also follow him on Twitter. And someday, when he's done with baseball, I would expect for him to possibly be like a movie producer for offbeat comedies. Maybe those like short documentary specials that you see on HBO that make you laugh. That's the kind of guy this is. But when you heard Cody Decker, 28 years old, 761 games in the minors, that he was getting a call up in September, what was your reaction? And what was his reaction, by the way?
Well, I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And, you know, and Cody is a really laid back and a funny guy. And he's, you know, he's done a lot of these fun videos that have gotten a lot of traction. You know, he's been on Keith Olbermann before. He did a funny video with pranking teammate Jeff Francoeur last year with AAA El Paso. You know, my first thought, Allison, was I bet you money that he thought somebody was pulling a prank on him.
Exactly.
It's 28 years old. And, you know, I talked to him by phone on Sunday night, and he had told me that, you know, on Sunday he had flown from El Paso to LAX and sort of reconciled with himself on the flight. That, you know, okay, this it's not going to happen again for me this year. You know, just kind of, okay, it is what it is. And he got a phone call from the farm director, and his first thought was, you know, shut up, you're lying to me. You know, you better be telling me the truth. This is better not be a joke. And, you know, then he called his mother, and he said he recorded the phone call with his mother. And he said, Mom, what are you doing on Monday? And she said, Cody, I'm not helping you move into your apartment. but he says, no, I'm going to the big leagues in Arizona. Can you come? So, you know, a neat deal. This guy was drafted in 2009. He's hit like 154 minor league home runs. He's kind of that, you know, gets the label of a 4A player, I guess. But really goes hard at it, you know, kind of fun-loving, dresses up, wears an ascot on these minor league road trips, but really has a good time. And here's the other thing. He has a really good heart, and I've gotten to know him, you know, fairly well, as much as you can, any of these minor leaguers over the years. And this is a guy that really works hard and really cares. And this really meant a lot to him, and it meant a lot to his family. And, you know, I think baseball is kind of filled with guys who kind of, I don't want to say they're robotic or just kind of vanilla, but, you know, I think baseball needs more guys like Cody Decker, you know, guys that truly love the game and appreciate it and aren't scared to poke fun at others, poke fun at themselves and have a good time. And, you know, Cody's a fun guy. This is a guy that hosts a trivia night and in Los Angeles during the off season. You know, these minor leaguers don't make any money, Allison. Yeah. And, you know, there's a guy that's had this kind of scrape by with credit cards, and he was an extra this past year on the State of Affairs on NBC.
Really?
Yeah, and I wrote about something on it was a Cut Four thing. He was a security guard, and he was blown up. So that was a part they can't revisit at any point. Just kind of fun stuff. But this guy's he's enjoying life, and this is a pretty cool chapter for him. As you could tell, I could probably go on and on about him, but I think these are cool stories. This is kind of what the game's about, and I just wish there were more guys like him.
So you're saying he was an extra in a show and he got killed off? He had like 45 seconds or something, and they killed him off, as like that you see like when they kill off like main characters, they already killed him off, so you can't make a return.
I think he's going to have to spin that off onto another program or something. But he was a security mall cop, and he woke up a guy that was a guy woke up in a mall, and the guy woke up wearing a bomb strapped to his chest. And so Cody's the security guard trying to calm the guy down. Well, the guy didn't calm down, and then lo and behold, they all blew up. I'm not giving away any big plot points here, so. You can find this on MLB.com Cut 4, but it was pretty hilarious. But and again, Cody just kind of has fun with this kind of stuff. So
that's outstanding. Oh, that's good stuff. Well, we'll all be rooting for him. So thank you so much, Corey. Appreciate that.
Yeah, you bet, Allison. Thank you.
And I am here to discuss all things Diamondbacks with Steve Gilbert, who is almost at the finish line covering this wonderful season for the Diamondbacks. Steve, I'm reading through some of the headlines, and I see that they're kind of adjusting the rotation maybe to rest some starters, Chase Anderson being the main one. What is the reason behind that, and how do they navigate through when they're not contending?
Yeah, Allison, I think that, you know, they've been trying to figure out what's been going on with Chase Anderson over the last 2 or 3 months, and he was one of their best starters, if not their best starter, the first couple months of the season. And then it just kind of seemed like he hit a wall, and they were concerned about fatigue. And so they had put him on the disabled list, essentially to give him a rest. And he came back after that and pitched okay in a couple of starts and then struggled again. And it's just kind of been a back and forth thing with him. So they're working on some mechanical things with him now in terms of trying to get the ball down better. So they want to kind of give him a bullpen outing or two with some of the new things they've been working on before they put him back into rotation. Rudy De La Rosa is another guy that's going to get an extra day or maybe even skip a start the next time through after he pitches on against the Giants coming up here this weekend. And that's because they don't want him facing the Dodgers again. He's really struggled this year against the Dodgers. And they also are concerned because for him, it's his first full season in big leagues and his first time pitching this many months in the season. So they're going to exercise some caution there and also get him off the Dodgers one more time this year. So what's nice for them is that they have the expanded roster. They have these extra starters. Ulysses Chacin is somebody that they want to get a look at again, and so they used him last night. They can insert these guys into the rotation at different times to kind of space things out as they need to, give guys extra rest or let guys work on things. It's nice for them to have the expanded roster to be able to do that right now.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting with De La Rosa. I mean, obviously, it's more of a it's not like they are trying to be strategic in pushing for a pennant or anything. I mean, you don't want him to get beat up by the Dodgers, but you also just don't want that kind of, I guess, mental exhaustion on his side. Is that more what they're thinking? Is just like, we need this guy to, be helping us down the road too, and if this gets in his head, it could be detrimental?
Yeah, I think they're thinking that. I think they're also thinking then that maybe, okay, they can use it as a way to get him some rest, and they have other guys they want to look at as well. So it all just kind of lines up. I think certainly if they were, if he was a more experienced pitcher, or if he was they were in a race and he was, one of their better pitchers at the moment, they could push him to pitch against the Dodgers. But right now it just doesn't seem like it makes sense to have him do that given where they're at and whatnot. They think that part of it could be that he gets a little more amped up for starts against the Dodgers. It's his organization that he was started out in that signed him initially. And part of it is they have a lot of left-handed hitters, and he hasn't necessarily matched up really well with left-handers this year. So it's kind of been a combination of both of those things, and they're just going to take advantage of the opportunity they have to give him a little bit extra rest.
So I was reading through some of the coverage from the recent Dodgers series, and of course they couldn't touch Zach Greinke, which does not speak to anything except that Zach Greinke is like the best pitcher on the planet right now. So it takes nothing away from the effort. Only three balls really hit out of the infield during the time that he was on the mound. But then they got to the Dodgers' bullpen, and they still lost. Does that frustrate teams this time of year if they're not really pushing for anything, but there's still a lot of pride on the line and they had a chance and then they couldn't do it?
Yeah, I think you see that there is some frustration that's kind of shown through these last few weeks as they've kind of, we talked about them seemingly to kind of hit a wall here. There is frustration because, even though they're not playing for a pennant race, there's still a lot of pride in there. There's still like work that goes into it, and they don't like failing. And Greinke's one of those guys that just gives them trouble. Back when he was with the Royals, ironically, they hit him pretty well at Chase Field a couple of times. But since he's been with the Dodgers, they have not had that kind of success with him. They did get to the bullpen, but it just was too little, too late. I think last night, as we're recording this, last night against the Padres, Tyson Ross, another guy who gives them trouble. They could do very little with him, but they still managed to run up his pitch count. And then when they got into the Padres' bullpen, they were able to come back and get a win. And I think that really was a lift for those guys in the clubhouse.
Okay, good stuff. Steve, thank you very much. Catch up with you soon.
Allison, it's always my pleasure.
Here with my probably slightly tired, maybe a little weary colleague, Thomas Harding, who was diligently covering the 16-inning affair with the Dodgers the previous night. So, Thomas, let's get right to it. Tell me what was going on there. It was a 5.5-hour game. And then yes. The Rockies won it. So how cool was that for them?
That was cool for them because they played, they're so far out of the race, I don't think they can see the race. But they played like it was the seventh game of the World Series. I mean, early in the game, Justin Turner had a hard slide that the Rockies felt was late into Nolan Arenado, who was covering second on a double play with the shift. And there were a lot of words from Walt Weiss and from Nolan Arenado toward the Dodgers and Justin Turner, and Don Mattingly got involved in it. And you could see the Rockies just trying to find a way to win a game. I mean, offensively, they don't do as well on the road as they do at home. They scratched out some runs early against Brett Anderson. Then they just kind of hung in there. The bullpen pitched 10 scoreless innings, which is a third inning shy of the club record. And Nolan Arenado ended up winning the game in the 16th inning with a home run. It's one of those games where, let's face it, the Dodgers have more concerns like trying to win a World Series. But for the Rockies, it's a game where they can kind of hang their hats on it, like, see, if we play well, if we play together, if we pitch decently, we can compete with anybody. So it was a good game for them, even though it wasn't the crispest game. They let a run score on a pop-up that dropped in the outfield and really didn't do a whole lot offensively. But, hey, every game isn't going to be pretty. You're not going to hit three home runs every game.
Yeah, so let's talk about this takeout slide from Turner that created a little bit of a sure. And Arenado was pretty classy with his comments after, saying like that this wasn't like something that motivated him or fueled him, and he kind of deferred to everybody else to just draw their own conclusions. But that didn't sit well too much with the Rockies, did it?
No, it didn't sit well at all. And that's something with this club that sometimes I wonder if it's missing. They do tend to bring in a whole lot of character type guys that's big in their evaluation. But what happens? You know, what happens when things get tough? You want those guys to, to fight back. And this is a team that I think they haven't had a fight since something like 2008 on the field. You know, it's always good to see them just not simply take being bullied around. Justin Turner's slide, he slid, and I think he landed on the bag. So it was a pretty late slide. Now, the play's timing was a little bit, I think, messed up because, A, you had a third baseman covering second base, and, B, the throw handcuffs him a bit. But, hey, nothing wrong with standing up and saying, I don't appreciate that play, and that's what the Rockies did.
Yeah, absolutely. It seemed to be a pretty civilized conversation. So there was also a lot of buzz not long ago about John Gray and his pitching against the Dodgers. So you seem to be pretty impressed with the result, even though he didn't get a win. He was on a pitch count, which maybe a little bit, he seemed to maybe be unhappy with that, but overall, I would imagine that this is very encouraging for the Rockies to see their third overall pick in 2013 making this kind of start.
Yeah, it's something that, let's face it, you wouldn't be celebrating that performance if you were in a race and you really needed that win. I mean, it was still too many pitches in less than five innings for John Gray, but just the fact that he stayed in a game with Kershaw, I mean, this is a guy who was really pumped about it. He said it was the biggest stage he'd ever been on, and he had pitched in some regional finals in college, University of Oklahoma. Those games are all over television. But this is a guy who aspires to battle against the Clayton Kershaws and the Zach Greinke's and Madison Bumgarner's in the division. So for him to show ace-like stuff, even though he doesn't have ace-like savvy yet, the Rockies are pretty happy with it. And let's face it, this is all about getting him accustomed to next season so that when he's in the rotation to start the year and everybody hopes that and there are no injuries and he comes back well, at the start of the year, the Rockies, their lineup is always going to be competitive in the division, one of the best, arguably the best lineup in the division. John Gray's going to be a reason why they think they can turn that into winning. So for him to go out and pitch well enough to keep the runs down against Clayton Kershaw, that's a feather in his cap. Now, like I say, he's going to have to throw more first-pitch strikes. I think it was something like 13 out of 22 batters, and that's just not enough. And he's going to have to not hit that 90-pitch mark in the fifth inning. But if he's able to keep guys off base the way he was, to hold down the runs, he could be a pretty good force in this rotation.
Thank you for listening to MLB.com Extras, the NL West.